Good afternoon. This is Minister Gabriel Emlak welcoming you to this edition of Signs and Seasons and my co-host, Sister Samara Baruji.
Samara, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Minister Emlak. How are you?
Yes. Oh, I'm good. Thank you so in such a great way for being here and giving me such a wonderful partner to work with. I can never sing her phrases enough, folks. She's just a very awesome, brilliant person to share with. Today we're talking about the astrology, the zodiac, and the status of women. As we move into the Aquarian age of brotherly love, freedom, liberation, the planet that rules Aquarius is in the sign of Libra, along with Saturn. Very interesting point, because Saturn is a co-ruler. Many people do not realize that with the planet Uranus, because it seems like a dichotomy, the planet of definition, redefinition, restriction, with the planet of liberation. But true liberation cannot really be experienced unless we are clear and defined and focused. And so today, we're going to talk about that blend between the energy of Aquarius, Saturn rather, and Uranus in Aquarius. And we're going to talk about how we can dedicate ourselves to getting a deeper understanding of our 12-dimensional personality and the relationships we as individuals, as a global family, can flourish, can improve, can move to another level where we can experience true liberation. The key words for this energy: alignment, redefinition, balance. And so as we move into today's program and intensify our understanding, we will begin to have more clarity.
Your recording has reached the maximum length. To replay your message,
good afternoon. I'm sorry that my other phone was on. Please excuse that. So what we're going to do is giving you a clearer, moving towards a clearer definition of ourselves as individuals. We're also going to talk about how we can get a deeper, a more intense balance between the masculine and the feminine aspects of our personality. As you know, as we've mentioned in our previous sessions of the astrology in the Bible, we're attempting to enhance our understanding of astrological symbolism and its vital role in the interpretation and the understanding of the Holy Scriptures. And I said Holy Scriptures, meaning all Scriptures. There is an abundance of information on astrology, metaphysics, in the world scriptures. We're focusing today on the astrological symbolism in the allegorical relationship narrative of Jacob and his 12 sons. This is the focus of this week's program, or the first part of the program. Most of the stories in the Christian Bible are written in what we call cryptographics. In this ancient system of writing, the deeper meanings of a particular verse, are concealed in the names, places, or things mentioned in that verse or passage. For example, when we analyze the names of Israel and Jacob and his 12 sons, we get a much deeper understanding than that which we obtain through a literal interpretation. For example, Jacob means leaving behind, bringing to an end, recompensing, and rewarding. Israel, is actually a combination of three names: Is, the feminine; Ra, the masculine; and El, the name for the divinity within the soul of every man and woman. And so the name Israel identifies that state of being in which a perfect balance is achieved. between the masculine aspects of human personality and the indwelling presence of our divinity. So today I want to remind us that there are 12 aspects to our personality. Each one of us has all 12 signs. For example, the Aries is represented by the tribe of Gad. Gad means fortunate abundance, organized division, assembly. I am is the key word for Aries. In the Christian Bible, I am is one of the names of God, Exodus 3:14. So you see, whenever we preface our names with the I am, we're declaring our divinity, and we should never, ever preface, follow the I am with anything negative. Person may say, I am feeling wonderful, but they would not say I am and then follow with sick. Always something positive, because the I am actually creates a vortex and draws into existence whenever we follow them. Preface with. Taurus is represented by the tribe of Issachar, and he will bring reward is the meaning of Hezekiah, I have is the key name for Taurus, constantly reminding ourselves that we have the mental and spiritual resources to create a successful and prosperous life will bring the rewards the Creator has prepared for all of us. Gemini. Gemini is represented by the sign of Simon. And Simon means hearing, understanding, and obeying. Hearing, understanding, and obeying. That's what Simon means. And so what we need to understand, and also the key word for Gemini is I think. As a man thinketh, as a woman thinketh in their heart, so is he, so is she. Reminds us that every aspect of our personality is influenced by what we think. Cancer is represented by the sign of Benjamin, which means son of God. Productiveness, I feel, is the key word for Cancer. And please remember now, you listen to Signs and Seasons today, we're talking about astrology and the zodiac and the state of affairs, the status of the women and men and the sacred feminine. But we want to understand that we're talking about all 12 parts of our personality as we are 12 dimensional beings. So when we say Cancer is represented by Benjamin, we're talking about the Benjamin faculty, the Benjamin factor in each one of us. I feel is the key word for Cancer. So when we feel in the depths of our hearts that we are all sons and daughters of God, heir to all that the Creator possesses, our productiveness will increase to unimaginable proportions. Many of us are keeping ourselves in a state of destitution because of the fact that we are not feeling and seeing and imagining that wealth. Leo is represented by the tribe of Judah. And Judah means praise Jehovah, confession of Jah. And so when we confess Jah, when we praise Jehovah by whatever name that we call the Creator, then all that the Creator possesses belongs to us. When we talk about the name of Jah and the name of Jehovah, we understand that I will is the key word for Leo. To transform our will into an expression of God's will is the highest way to confess Jah. A God-centered life dedicated to service is the best praise for Jehovah. By whatever name we call the creative force. Virgo is represented by the tribe of Levi. Levi means joining, uniting. I analyze is the key word for Virgo. And so we are instructed to use our analytical abilities to separate truth from falsehood. Temporal situations from permanent realities. This will unite and join us to the creator source of life. And we say reunite because we can never separate from the source of life, but we have separated from a conscious perspective. In our subconscious mind, we're all at one with the source of life. It can be no other way. Libra is represented by the tribe of Asea. Asea means straightforward, blessedness. The key word for Libra is I balance. A balanced relationship between the masculine and feminine aspects of our personalities are required before we can walk the straight gate in our path. And that's one of the major themes of today's program, is to learn how we can establish this state of equilibrium and balance. The blessedness of this achievement will be manifested through a harmonious marriage of intellect and intuition, of thoughts and feelings. And then we have Scorpio, probably the most misunderstood sign in the whole entire zodiac because of its intensity. Intense people, we all know some, we may be one ourselves, generally have the energy of Scorpio prominent, or the planet Pluto prominent in their personality. Scorpio is represented by the tribe of Dan. We have a Dan. We have a Dan with BBS. Dan means a judge, a ruler of righteous judgment, a defender. And I desire is the key word for Scorpio. God has promised to give us the desires of our heart. And we do have, all of us have the desires of our heart. Many of us are desiring poverty. Many of us are desiring dysfunctional relationships. Many of us are desiring things that are not advantageous to our growth and development. So our desire is the key word for Scorpio. So the magnetic vibrations of our desires attract events and circumstances that strengthen or weaken us. We can actually judge a person's character by the quality of his or her desires. The desire of the righteous is only good, we're reminded in Proverbs 11:23. Sagittarius is represented by the tribe of Joseph. Joseph means whom Jehovah, whom God will add to, from perfection to perfection. Interestingly, the key words for Sagittarius, I perceive. So if we accept the challenge to be perfect as our Father in heaven and earnestly strive to enhance our perceptions of spiritualities, God will add to our understanding and lead us from perfection to perfection. And you see, people will often say, oh, I'm only human. I'm not perfection. Someone has moved their mic. Someone will say, I'm not perfect. And we can judge a person's perfection to perfection. And so we will say, I'm only human, I'm not perfect. But when we do something, we attempt to make a perfect meal, a perfect garment, fix a car to perfection. So we do all have in the depths of our heart that need and that desire for perfection, because we are in reality perfect. So let us remember that, okay? God will add to our understanding and lead us from perfection to perfection. Capricorn is represented by the tribe of Naphtali. Naphtali means wrestling of Jehovah. Mutual intertwining with Jah. I use is the key word for Capricorn. The wrestling of Jehovah is the struggle between worldly ambitions and spiritual aspirations. Spiritual aspirations that every soul encounters at some point in its earthly sojourn. A mutual intertwining with Jah is the victorious consequence experienced by those of us who master the art of divine utilization. See, using is different from abusing. Why do we want, we should want people in our lives who we can be of use to, that can be of use to us, but we need not to abuse. Scrooge in the Christmas scenario represents abusive use. Jesus and Scrooge are both Christmas personalities, whether it's allegorical or historical, or it's historical. So we all need to understand use as opposed to abuse. Aquarius, represented by the tribe of Reuben. Reuben means vision of a sun. I know is the key word for Aquarius. If then I be single, that whole body shall be full of light. That's the report of all men and women who have opened their third eye and beheld the vision of the Son of God. Where we don't need a scripture, someone else to tell us, a priest, a rabbi, an imam, a guru, a sheikh, whatever. We see for ourselves. First-hand experience. That's what the age of Aquarius is about. And that's why we find so many people moving away from gurus and strict obedience without their own intuitive faculties in place when it comes to certain mandates that people quote from scriptures. We want our young people want firsthand experience, and they can have it through the science of meditation. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. And Pisces, represented by the sign of Zebulun. Zebulun means surrounded, dwelling, habitation. I believe is the key word for Pisces. I believe. I know. I believe. This intuitive awareness of a higher power provides a secure habitation for those who dwell in the secret places of the Most High. You find out that we have become so influenced by the Western intellectual mental function is that we have lost all respect for our intuition. You will look for a conclusion, for an idea, and you come up with something. People say, we could better test that. We better go examine that. I examined it. I prayed for the answer. I got the answer. I don't need to go test it and examine it. We'll see it in the works. So we have to discontinue putting so much faith in mundane sciences and precepts and concepts, and return to our intuition. The bird flies where it flies without a map. Dogs, pets go across the planet and find their owners just through the intuitive guidance. So we have to begin to get back to that. It's now 5:18 here in the California, and you're listening to Signs and Seasons with Minister Gabriel M. Light. And in this first part of segment of the program, we're talking today about astrology, the zodiac, and the status of women. And as we move through this age of, move into this age of Aquarius, move through the sign of Libra, we're talking about balance and equilibrium. And so in this next phase of our program, Sister Samara Wooty, a very dedicated, studious, knowledgeable individual who has definitely done so much of her homework in terms of coming up with the facts and doing the research. And so today she is going to talk to take us on to another phase. And in the last 20 minutes after Sister Samara, we're going to open the lines for you. And we're going to help you to get a deeper understanding of what your astrological makeup is and at what place in your astrological chart, if you decide to have one done, have decided to have a reading done, where you this year, this very important year of 2012, can discover where the need to balance and examine and equilibrate your masculine and feminine aspects of your personality. So it's now 5:20. We are just right on the button, and I'm going to ask Sister Sumara Guruji to give us some more insight. Sister Sumara, how are you today for the second time?
I'm doing great. I'm just fantastic, Minister. I'm like, thank you. You know, I thought Gemini was the most misunderstood sign, but I learned today that it's Scorpio. So,
because you have, as soon as you say Scorpio, they become afraid and they don't understand just briefly that the intensity of Scorpio gives them that they've ruled by Pluto. They're the only sign that has three symbols, and so people fear Scorpio instead of understanding that. They can go to the highest through their Scorpio energy. Yes.
Yes, I guess the symbols that represent Scorpio do have that reputation of being kind of deadly, except for the highest symbol, the scorpion, the snake, and the eagle. And so I guess.
And then the phoenix.
The phoenix, yes, a variation of the higher expression of the eagle, death and regeneration, immortality. Okay, last week we discussed the sacred feminine and the week before that. So I'm slowly building on the understanding and concept of what the sacred feminine, both in the males and females, represent. Today, I'm going to be a little bit more left brain and talk about the sacred feminine in terms of women and their status in the world today. The reason I'm doing this is because I would love us to move beyond our microcosmic understanding of women in the world and see things more globally. Like we use in the sustainable model, live locally and think globally. So I want to encourage you to live locally, but when you think about the world, think about it beyond your neighborhood. So today, the focus is on getting us to understand that we are one, and what is done to one is done to the whole. And we want to collectively rise. We don't want to fall collectively. We want to rise collectively. And so part of the focus of Signs and Seasons and Minister Amlak and myself is to reach enough people that we hit that critical mass. And the formula that I use is we hear about the 99%, the 99%, the 1%, the 1% are ruling the world. Well, that is a cosmic formula. And it's based on it takes 1% to shift the 99%. Only 1% to shift the 99%. Either one way or the other. So we're looking for the 1% spiritually awakened and conscious people to shift the 99% so we can all rise together. So the interconnectedness that we experience. And recently, we experience a lesson in the Western world. And that lesson was demonstrated by our global market. And what we have experienced is the crumbling of a certain parasitical aspect of the global market. So those people that were subsisting or existing on that parasitical aspect, meaning that in order to get ahead, someone else had to suffer. Someone else lost. It was not a win-win situation. One person win, the other person lose. That's not a very sustainable model. Because why? We're in this together. And what you do to one, you do to the whole. So we're going to feel it on some level. We may not all experience it the same way, but we are going to experience it if someone is being made to be the loser in our situation. So the information I'm sharing today is coming from some information gathered in 1995, the Beijing Declaration. It was adopted by the Fourth World Conference on Women. And there were participating governments expressed their commitment to advance the goals of equality, development, and peace for all women everywhere in the interests of humanity. So this is an indication of the rising of the sacred feminine consciousness that we have put into place a declaration to improve the conditions of women everywhere in the world for the sake of humanity, not for the interests of women, but for the sake of everyone. So I just wanted to give us, and they do this, I think, every 5 years. So we are in the, so maybe, what is this, in about 2015, we will be getting 2015, we'll be doing it again, getting new statistics. Okay, in today's world, there are 57 million more men than women. This was kind of a surprise to me because I thought women were the majority on the planet, but there are 57 million more men than women. This surplus of men is concentrated in the youngest age groups, and it steadily diminishes until it disappears at about age 50. Thereafter, becoming a surplus of women owing to their longer life expectancy. A surplus of men characterizes the world's most populous countries. And we know where those countries are, India and China. They're the countries that are primarily experiencing a surplus of men. And the reason we know is because they consciously practice giving, supporting male births, where females are killed, aborted, thrown away, just discarded like garbage. So they're facing a crisis in that there are not enough women available for the men when they're ready to marry. See, another fallout. And this changes as women get older, where there now becomes a surplus of men. I mean, a surplus of women and not enough men, because the men die earlier. People are marrying at older ages. We're getting married older and older. But this is especially in the Western cultures that women tend to be marrying around the age of 30 or older in many of the Western countries. In some developing countries, however, such as Mali, Niger, and other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, women are still marrying way below 20. Fertility is on the decline to 2.5 births per woman. But women who bear more than 5 children are still common in countries where women marry early. Early you marry, more children. Fertility ages. Early marriages and high fertility limits women's opportunities for education and employment, and severely diminish their chances for advancement in life. So that has bearing on the children. Once marriage is established, maintaining families and caring for family members lies primarily on the shoulders of women, who spend on average more working hours per day than men. Women work longer and harder than men. Health. Women live longer than men, as I mentioned. However, social, cultural, and economical factors affect the natural advantage of women compared to men. So yes, they live longer, but they're also living a more challenging life. It's more difficult for them. For example, in developing countries where pregnancy and childbirth threatens women's exposures, it equalizes the life expectancy. Women are dying in childbirth and pregnancy. So it slowly begins to balance that longevity. Of course, it's not quite the same in developed countries, except among certain groups of women. Something else that balances out the longevity of women, unhealth, especially in the developed countries, the Western countries, America, England, countries in Europe, France, Italy, their unhealthy behaviors. They're now living, they're smoking, they're drinking, they're not getting enough sleep, they're recreational drugs, whatever it may be, toxic environments, they're also dying sooner and getting diseases sooner. Okay, another major effects on women, HIV and AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, and the Middle East. Women account for more than half of people living with HIV and AIDS. In the U.S., African-American women, fastest growing groups affected by HIV and AIDS. This is and this has detrimental effects on the communities and families. The children are being left orphaned or being placed in the system because the mothers are dying or the children are being born infected. Education. There's progress. Good thing here. It's slow and uneven, but there is progress in the literacy status of adult women and men around the world. However, there's a persistent disadvantage that women face. Women account for 2/3 of the world's 774 million adult illiterates, a proportion that has remained unchanged over the past two decades, at least since we started keeping records. Over 2/3 of the 774 million adults that are illiterate are women. In almost all countries, literacy rates for the young, this is both male and female, are higher than those for adults. So this is a great plus. The majority of young people in the world are literate, and improvements in youth literacy rates have been accompanied by declining gender disparities. So both male and females, it's shrinking. Male and females all over the world, at a younger age, they're being educated. So the illiteracy rate is decreasing in the younger age group. Okay, while the overall progress in primary education in the past decade is encouraging, major barriers stand in the way of progress. 72 million children, 54% of them are girls, are out of school. So more than half of young girls are not in school. Although there's an increase in younger people being educated, more than half of those young girls are out of school. So that's telling you how really horrendous it was before, that the disparities is declining, but still 54% of the girls are not in school. Male dominance in higher education is on the decrease. This is another sign of the change in focus. As women, as you move more into higher education, female are becoming more highly educated than male. In countries such as sub-Saharan Africa, and Southern and Western Asia, they're still pretty much struggling. Women are still not being educated. The gender differences in higher education is apparent in where women are predominant are in fields such as education, health, welfare, social sciences, humanities, and arts. These are more right-brain, feminine kinds of interests and focus. And women are still underrepresented in the fields of science and engineering. These are still primarily male-dominated field, and more left-brain kind of thinking is required. Around the world, a lack of gender balance in decision-making positions in government persists. Women continue to be underrepresented in national parliaments, which is more in parliament, refers more to like in England, in the predominantly British Commonwealth countries, when you hear the word, I guess. where an average only 17% of seats are occupied by women. The share of women among ministers also averages 17%. The highest positions are even more elusive. Only 7 of 150 elected heads of state in the world are women, and only 11 of 192 heads of government. Very, very disproportionate. The situation is similar at the level of local government. Female elected councillors are underrepresented in all regions of the world, and female mayors even more so. In work, women's participation in the labor market remains steady, about over 52% women are represented in the labor market. In contrast, global labor force participation rates for men declined steadily over the same period, from 81% to 77%. In the private sector, women are on most boards of directors of large companies, but their numbers remain low. This is to say that wherever we look, women are, some areas they're on the rise, in other areas they're appallingly low. Of the 500 largest corporations in the world, only 13 are the female chief executive officer. So when we talk about women in developing nations being more disadvantaged, the reason I say it's relative is because in the West there's such advances, but in the decision-making areas, in the real positions of power, women are still very oppressed. They're facing the glass ceiling. They're hindered here in the West from access to leadership positions in private companies. Violence against women. While rates of women exposed to violence vary from one region to the other, we know that in places where there are war, the rape of women is being used as a weapon against whatever group that are fighting. Women being raped are the weapons. Women being killed, whether purposely or accidentally, women and children are constantly being killed. Violence against women is a universal phenomenon. And women are subjected to different forms of violence, physical, sexual, psychological, and economical, both within and outside their homes. Perpetrators of violence against women are most often their intimate partners. Women are abused physically and sexually by intimate partners at different rates throughout the country. But the estimate is between, I think, a minimum of 20% to over 50% of women are abused by someone in their family. And there are no exceptions in any countries. All over the world, in every country, developed, undeveloped, women are being abused by their intimate partner. Younger women are more at risk than older women. And since the consequence of such violence lasts a lifetime, it has a severely adverse impact on women. And I know this personally because I have spent many, many years healing myself from domestic violence, intimate partner violence. Good news, female genital mutilation is on the decline. All the attention and focus is caused the decline, and less women are being compelled to suffer from this. However, it's still too high. Environmental, the burden of water collection rests on women, lack of access to clean energy fuels, women primarily deal with this, poor infrastructure and housing conditions, women live in huts and hovels with their children, sleeping on dirt floors. Natural hazards disproportionately affect women in terms of unpaid work, health, and just general survival. Women are more exposed to smoke from burning, you know, woods and twigs and twines and stuff like that while cooking and taking care of children and household. they suffer from disease from exposure to these smokes, respiratory infection, pulmonary disease, and lung cancer. Poverty affects women of lone mothers with children, higher poverty rates than lone fathers with children in the same parts of the world. A lone father with his children does much better than a lone mother with her children. This is in general, whether it's here in the U.S. or in a developing nation. Poverty rates are higher for women than for men living in one-person households. So wherever you look, women in general are at the bottom of the heap. There are some few exceptions where women are catching up, such as in education. They're catching up in education. Yes, they've got a longer lifespan, but that is slowly as the developed world. Women move more and more in the male-dominated fields. They are now, their lifespan's decreasing. In the rest of the world, women are still outliving men. Diseases are catching up with women. And poverty, for eons now, thousands of years, women have been on the bottom of the scale where money, riches, resources are concerned. So I just wanted to wrap that up. That's my venture in the left brain, just to say the reason it is so important for us to focus on the sacred feminine or the divine sacred or the supernal mother is because I know that we love our daughters, we love our mothers and our sisters, and in addition, we are one. We function in the world. We're an ecological system that functions together. And what you do to one, you do to the whole, the complete. And we are our brothers and our sisters' keeper. Even if we don't always want to be, we still are. And we are now in the golden age of Aquarius, as Minister Amlak mentioned. And it's time for us to begin to expand our understanding and to live locally and think globally. Back to you, Minister Amlak.
No, thank you.
I feel like a newscaster.
That's what you're doing. We want to thank you. That was a wonderful, wonderful presentation. As our listeners can see, as our family can see, Sister Samara does some very, very intense research, and she's been at it for quite a number of years. So thank you very, very much. And I'm glad these are going into the archives. So our listeners who can't make it on time, on the time we're on, we'll be able to go in there and pull the programs up at 5:42 in California on the West Coast. One of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking, given that wonderful exploration and explanation, that many of people are not aware of the fact, and you're addressing this in the book also, the hand that rocks the cradle, is that a major problem or the major contribution to this whole patriarchal global family or structure has come to us through religion. And that as quiet as it's kept, a great deal of the chauvinistic patriarchal attitudes that we have are perpetuated through the church. I remember when I first started working on the talk for the book in 1991, and I moved to Washington, D.C., and the lady who was working on the book, Sister Wangaza, her husband, or someone, she sent someone by to pick up the manuscript, and he jokingly said to me, "Well, it's a wonderful idea, but we all know that I came out of man's rib, and from man's rib, and this kind of thinking is what contributes so largely to this patriarchal bias consciousness." I was in Atlanta at one time, in a shopping mall, and I'm speaking to a sister that was in one of these religious movements, and she said, "Oh, well, we know that the man's hands in God's hand, the woman's hands in the man's hands, and the child's hands in the mother's hands. And that's a bunch of foolishness. But another time, a Muslim brother said to me in D.C., he said, "Oh, such a wonderful thing. God has blessed a woman with being the second in creation." This kind of craziness. And it's craziness because any intelligent man, any intelligent mind, we have to ask themselves, is God fickle? Does he first make woman from man and then turns around and makes man from woman? So we have to really question and understand the role that the church has and is playing today. The horrible, despicable, I don't have the words, manner in which many of our religious teachers and teachings and leaders are dealing with the subject of the respect and liberation of women whom we have come out of. And I always say, brothers, how do you dare think that you can be superior to what you came out of? And so it's wonderful to hear how you put these ideas together, Sister Samara. To remind us, particularly now, because just as there is a regression or an attempt to regress into many, many forms of racism, there's also an attempt to regress into the suppression of women. And rather than step up to the plate and make our skills, whether it's a racist situation or a gender situation, why not just step up to the plate and bring our skills up to par rather than constantly try to push the people of other races and other genders down? I mentioned in my book, The African American's Role in America's Spiritual Destiny, the genocidal drive across the planet. And it's not because of the right to live. It's because, as Patrick Buchanan says in his book, Death of the West, he says that there is a fertility problem that really needs to be addressed. But the way it should be addressed with races in the Western world, rather than exterminating people and doing the genocidal thing, or killing women of color or who are not of a Caucasian origin, so they're afraid that in 50 years or so, even less than that, that we will have to be one family, one melanin family, rather than trying to preserve our exclusiveness on not being a person of color. And so this is all these kind of things are happening right in plain sight, but we are not really clear on these happening. These things are happening, and so we definitely need to bring more light. I was amazed when you just said, Sister Samara, how many more men there are on the planet. And I'm glad that you also brought out the fact that this is, of course, is a part of the drive to whether it's in China, other places, or whether it's here in America, where more women of color are being locked up now. And that's why I'm always perturbed, annoyed when I see people skipping down the street, dancing through the tulips, and not even realizing the kind of things that are happening behind the scenes.
And now they're locking up. We here in America are definitely systematically being brought back into enslavement. Because, and I don't mean this from even the perspective of race. I mentioned last week that African Americans are like the canary in the cave, the coal miner's cave. You send the canary in, if there's oxygen, the canary will find its way out. But there, if there isn't, he will die or she will die, and that will be an indication that it's not safe to go in. So whatever happens to African Americans first in this country eventually happens to everyone else. So right now, the women have been locked up. As you mentioned, the men are already locked up. Over a million men are imprisoned. And now the children are being locked up. The schools are calling police officers, and they're taking little six-year-olds, I'm handcuffing them and taking them into the police station. And I just want to say, yes, the child may be having a tantrum, but maybe it's all the artificial food that they've eaten, and they can't stand still. They can't think right. So they're reacting from not being fed right. And so, go ahead.
Much of what's happening is also taken by the general public as an improvement. You know, the idea of cutting out the human factor. Now everything is texting and email and electronic. We don't really understand or taking people. You can't get a person on the phone. You go to a supermarket, you can't find a person at the counter because they got a machine. They don't understand that this is the attempt of the elite to eliminate the human factor, so many people won't be needed. In these last 5 minutes, I want to bring up at 5:51, 4 minutes.
You've got someone on line three waiting.
Okay, well, I didn't know. No one.
Okay.
Did you? Okay. Okay, well, let's take them in this last. Yes, Mr. or Miss, who is it?
If you're checking on the
good
text,
afternoon.
On the text message, you have someone, Heidi Johnson.
Yes, is she there?
I'm
looking
here.
At the text. Okay, hi, Heidi.
Yes,
how are
I'm
you?
Here.
Yes, Heidi.
Hi.
We're glad to hear you today. I want to say two things. This is January 7th. This is your daughter.
Yes. And then you have some information about my son, too, I think.
Right. The thing I wanted to share with your son is that last week, I got 1995 to 1999. So the thing I should have mentioned to you, there's some things that are similar because the planet Saturn was moving very slowly through the zodiac. Of course, it takes 2 years. But he has a lot of energy in Cancer in his chart. And so having so much energy in Cancer, at least four planets. And so there really should be some conscious work done to understand how not just this situation with his dad occurred, how it affected him, but also situations that have happened all the way back because of the fact that with his energy, Cancer vibration, there's a tendency to keep everything in the shell, keep everything inside, okay? And so you want to help him liberate himself. We'll tell you how we can work on this to free his emotional energy up now. And also to help you understand that astrologically we see with the kind of energies affecting his chart right now that what happened right now is definitely a obvious karmic experience of losing his dad at this particular time. Okay? So we need to talk.
Okay.
We need to talk more about that. Now,
Minister,
yes, ma'am. Just tell me real quick.
I'm not sure if you noticed that there's also a request for January 7th.
So I'm looking right at it.
Okay.
So I'm saying that what's happening, so I just want to clear that up. The 7 and 1 is 8. This is a 4-year for your daughter. The 7 vibration of her January 7th, 2002 makes her... this year for her being 7 and 2 of 4, this is a 8 and 5 is a transition year for her, okay? And so maybe the situation that just happened is part of her transition. But let me just give you, she would be having a loner kind of personality. Is that right?
Say that again. What kind of personality?
A loner.
No,
likes a lot of,
not at
likes
all.
Likes a lot of privacy.
The
thing that I want you to look at, being born on a 7 day, no matter how they bring it out, The seven day, uh-huh. the seven is the energy of the person that likes that privacy. So maybe that's not being observed, but
well,
it's go ahead.
Like she has her own little space. She does have her own little space, but she likes to come and she'll come and share your space all the time.
Right.
Like
right,
regular.
Right.
Like nobody
right,
gets seven, their own space.
Right. But sevens like this space. The other thing with her that you want to work with her is that she's got a lot of pride.
Yeah.
Is a proud kind of person. She also has a natural need and desire to be outdoors. She's a very executive, take charge type. Are you seeing that?
Yes.
She, very much. You may have to remind her.
She's a natural director.
Right. You might have to remind her more than the other children who the parent is. Okay.
Oh yeah, well, she's the parent. I just take direction from her.
That's what I'm saying. So just understand that at an early age how to direct that. This lets us know in this last minute. This lets us know that, and she's also someone who would have a natural attraction to medicine. You know, to fixing and the healing. Has she manifested that yet?
She's a natural healer. Yes.
Okay, so work with that because it's in her chart. She has the energy of Pluto and the energy of Mars tied in very tightly. Also, you want to work with her not to let vindictiveness become a part of her makeup. Okay.
Yeah, we work with that all the time. I'm more on that right now.
Yeah, she's very intense, and so when someone
she's
does
very
something,
intense,
it hits her. Right, so understand that, and we'll talk more. I'll have my number 404-441-7248. Anyone is listening who's on, we can't take you today. It's 4556 here in California. Who wants to get inside? I'm glad you called, Sister Heidi, because you want this
Thank
information.
You very much.
Because one of the major things of raising children is to understand how to direct their energies. And so please call again.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll go in depth to how you, because she's a powerhouse. You know, she's done some real powerful leadership, healing work in other incarnations, and she's here to do it again, just at the right time and just with the right parent.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Great show today.
There? Right. And she's also a writer. Does she write now?
Yeah, she writes. She writes stories. She writes songs. She writes.
Right. So I'm saying, let's get that going, okay? And
okay.
Try to answer those mean questions that she had all the time. Okay.
Oh yeah, she keeps me on my toes. All right, thank you very much. Great show.
Sister, thank you so much. And thank our listening audience. Sorry we don't have, well, we had the time that we had. Sister Samara, thank you so very much for the time and energy you put into that presentation. Are you there?
Yes, I am. And thank you so much for all the information you shared about the 12 tribes and astrological tribes, the zodiacal. That was very informative.
Okay. And thanks for Doug and Dan. That you're here with us. We got 2 minutes to go. I know they have to rush right off. We will see you next week. Let people know about going into the archives, folks, and please do all that you can do to support BBS Radio. God bless you.
Yes.